Now to more on emerging technologies and tech companies with This Week in Tech. Entrepreneur and technology author Steve Sammartino joined me earlier in Melbourne. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
So Snapchat's company results are out, and while it's hardly unusual for a tech company, or any company in fact, to fail to meet market expectation, there's something about Snap Inc.'s results that's caught your attention. What is that?
Yeah, so after their IPO this year, Snap has now worth close to half of its value. And Facebook offered the founders a dizzying $3 billion to acquire the app when they were going through a growth phase and Facebook was struggling, its younger users going away. But it appears that Facebook, back in 2013 when Facebook snapped up a little-known startup called Onavo, Onavo was a developer of apps designed to help smartphone users understand how much data apps were taking on their smartphones and then reduce that data usage. Now, what Facebook has done is used Onavo after they purchased it to see how Snapchat's adoption changed over time. And when Instagram, by the way, which is owned by Facebook, copies Snapchat's My Story, Facebook could use Onavo to see how well certain services were going so that they could copy those services. So Facebook basically knew exactly how much they were hurting Snapchat, where Snapchat was growing, and could launch features through this app that they owned to compete directly with their major competitor. So essentially, they were spying on their competitors, and as their features have been copied, Snapchat's growth has actually gone the other way. And Mark Zuckerberg came out saying there is no shame in copying. However, this leads to questions about the legality of what Facebook is doing. A former official of the US's Federal Trade Commission, similar to Australia's ACCC, which protects consumers, has raised concerns that Facebook is using customers' own data to help them squash competitors.
So that's Facebook trying to cement its market power. Let's now look at similar attempts by another huge player, Google. What should we be wary about if we use the Google search engine?
Yeah, Google have had a really interesting shift recently. If we think back, Google used to be all about helping you find exactly what you were after on the open internet and sending you straight to the most relevant page. And they built their business around sending you elsewhere to the variety of the web, to the most relevant page, no matter who or where it was. Well, not anymore. Google is now beginning more of a walled garden than ever. And over time, their search results have begun showing more of what the user wants inside the actual Google homepage.
So they won't show pages that aren't Google.
No, that's right. So what they're doing is screen scraping and taking information off the page that's providing that information and then keeping it inside the Google homepage. So they now summarize major news articles. They have full pages scraped from other websites so that you don't have to visit them. And it builds in the ability to shop with its ads from other websites inside Google. And no information is immune. So it takes these snippets and keeps you on the homepage to monetize every move and every click.
And linking in Apple now, it's all about the big four today. Some clever financial brains have worked out that Google paid Apple $3 billion last year in order to retain its market position as the leading search engine on iPhones. Talk us through this.
It's very interesting that Google want to keep you on their homepage. And given what we've just discussed, being the default search engine on Apple's iPads and iPhones is incredibly important to them. If we think about the number of devices that Apple have, it's more than 1 billion devices or handsets that people are using to search the web. Now, that's 30% of the internet population. So by handing over that $3 billion to Apple, it basically guarantees immediate access. It's a very strategic move, and while it sounds like a lot of money, that level of power and influence, it's really interesting at this time. And I personally think that regulators possibly need a revised definition of antitrust as tech company tentacles spread horizontally across industries, creating inordinate power.
You mentioned that there is some concern among US regulators. How is the sort of market power we've been talking about regulated by governments?
Yeah, so the main challenge has been that antitrust has historically been about vertical industries where if you have a certain market share in an industry, then antitrust violations are what comes into it. But the challenge with digital information is that you tend to spread thinly and widely. And so it seems as though you are not in violation, but the information that you have gives you control over a large number of industries. And so regulators at this time seem to be a little bit flaccid and haven't acted upon the power of the large four technology companies, and it's mainly because they don't actually have large market shares in the market that they compete in, but they have a large influence over all industries that they touch.
Interestingly, Steve, one area of the technology space where we are seeing moves to increase government regulation is in governments seeking access to the information held by tech companies. And there's a curious blog post today from a web hosting company called DreamHost, which has revealed that the US Justice Department has asked it to hand over information about people who visited an anti-Donald Trump website. It's going to court this week. Tell us what you know about the case.
DreamHost disclosed that they're in a month-long battle, legal battle, with the Department of Justice about a website called disruptj20.org. Now, the site says and describes itself as building the framework needed for mass protests to shut down the inauguration of Donald Trump and planning widespread direct actions to make that happen. Clearly, the country of America, freedom of speech and freedom of information is something that they pride themselves upon. But the DOJ has requested all file, all IP addresses, visitor logs, contact information, email logs, and photos of thousands of people who have simply just visited the website, over a million people. Now, while more than 200 protesters were arrested during the inauguration for vandalism and other incidents, it's not clear that visiting or interacting with a website is in any way a crime or indicates any sort of behaviour that justifies a warrant. So it seems like a dramatic overstretch, and it's not too dissimilar from the laws that we have in Australia now, where metadata is accumulated about everyone on where you go and who goes where in a digital fashion. But what this metadata does is it lacks the context or the content of where you went. So metadata is a very confusing thing because it provides enough information to say who was there, but it doesn't really say what anyone has done. So this is a very curious case, which certainly seems like regulation going the wrong way.
Steve Sammartino, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's entrepreneur and technology author Steve Sammartino.